32. Martin, Gwen, Roy, and Britt made their way down the cliff, across the lava flow to the far side of the ravine, and along the path upstream at a much faster pace than those they were following. Not carrying an item that was designed specifically to be almost impossible to carry made it much easier. They came to the head of the flow just in time to see a group of bedraggled men that they all instantly recognized huddled together on a large, bare expanse of rock, preparing to toss some sort of hoop into a shaft of light. Martin considered calling out to them, but the constant thundering of the fire geyser would have drowned him out. Their friends threw the hoop, which landed flat on the ground. They looked at it for a moment. Then the rock beneath them opened up and swallowed them, leaving the hoop on the surface next to a hole. Gwen, Britt, Martin, and Roy picked their way from island to island as quickly as they could without falling into the lava. They were about halfway to the hole when the shining metal hoop leapt into the air and streaked into the hole that had swallowed their friends. They double-timed it across the lava flow, but even at twice their cautious pace, they weren't moving that fast. It seemed to take forever to reach the side of the hole. When they looked down into it, they were puzzled by the sight of a polished white surface.
"We need to find out what's going on down there," Britt said.
"Yeah," Roy agreed. "But I wouldn't want to just stick my head in there. There's no way to tell what might happen."
Gwen said,
"Agreed. It would be pretty foolish to just run up and stick our heads in that hole without taking any precautions. I guess it's a good thing Martin's already done exactly that. What do you see, Martin?"
Martin was lying on his belly, neck deep in the hole. He surfaced and turned back to report to the others.
"It's them! Some of them, at least. I definitely saw Philip, Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy. I think Philip might have seen me, but I'm not sure."
Roy asked, "Where's Jeff?"
Martin said,
"Well, there's a fifth guy there. His back was to me, but I don't think it's Jeff. It doesn't look like Jeff, and whoever it is, he's got the guys lined up and is yelling at them about something. Also, that hula hoop thing is whooshing around back and forth for some reason."
Gwen, Britt, and Roy looked at each other, puzzled, then dove to the ground to join Martin. They all hung their heads down into the hole for a few seconds, then pulled their heads out to discuss what they'd seen. Roy said,
"Yeah, that's not Jeff."
Martin asked,
"Did you see Gary's leg?"
"What's left of it, you mean?"
Britt said.
"It was hard to miss. The trail of blood sort of drew the eye."
Gwen muttered,
"He's gonna kill them, whoever he is. We have to get down there."
Britt said,
"We can't just jump in. We need a plan."
"What do you have in mind?"
Gwen asked.
"I don't know," Britt sputtered. "I haven't had any time to come up with a plan. I need a minute to think. Roy?"
Roy shook his head.
"No, I don't know. I'm an engineer. Most of the job is taking your time and thinking things through. Gwen?"
Gwen said,
"I'm a designer. Same thing. This is no good. We're all used to planning ahead."
They looked at each other, their expressions dripping with desperation. Finally, Britt sighed and said,
"Martin, what do we do?"
Martin said,
"Right. We jump in the hole."
"What?
Carefully?"
Martin said.
"Sort of hang down and land on your feet. There's a room behind where they're standing. Did you see it?"
The others nodded, so Martin continued.
"There was a computer on a table in that room. I figure whoever that guy is, he made all this. Britt, you're as clever as Roy, and you're better with computers, so you drop in first and sneak around to the left. Try to get to that room. If you can access that computer, you might be able to transport us all out of here, or at least get our powers back. We'll drop in after you, cut right, and draw his attention away from you."
Britt said, "What if he sees me?"
Martin barely thought before saying,
"Run to the left, draw his attention. We'll drop in, sneak around to the right, and get to the computer."
Britt asked,
"What if he sees all of us?"
Martin said,
"Well, he can't look in two directions at once."
Gwen said,
"I don't think..."
"Don't think! Act!"
Martin interrupted.
"Time's wasting!"
Britt sat up and hung her legs into the hole, but paused before she lowered herself in. She looked at Martin and asked,
"Can I think while I'm acting?"
Martin said,
"I don't recommend it. Just slows you down. In you go! We're right behind you."
Britt hung down by her hands. Her feet were still at least 4 feet from the floor. She studied the curve of the floor, let go of the rim, and dropped onto all fours. She made more noise than she would have liked, but the awful little man in the awful, ill-fitting clothes was too busy ranting and raving to hear. She glanced up to the others to let them know she was all right. Then she immediately started sneaking around to her left. She concentrated on being quiet, trying deliberately not to get caught up in whatever that lunatic who had Philip and the others was saying. She definitely heard him tell Tyler that it had been a toss-up whether to kill him or Jeff, which made her breath catch. She didn't know Jeff well, but she felt bad for him, and terrible for the others who did know him well, especially Roy, who seemed to value him very much. She heard the others dropping to the floor behind her. She had moved nearly a quarter of the way around the perimeter of the room and dared go no farther without some kind of distraction. She looked at Philip. He hadn't moved. She suspected he couldn't move, but his eyes were locked on her. She gave Philip her most reassuring fake smile, then looked to the rest of her team. Predictably, Martin was out in front with Gwen and then Roy behind him. She briefly wondered if Roy had heard what the lunatic had said about Jeff, but the look on his face told her he had. Martin was slowly approaching the stranger. Martin looked puzzled. He was probably trying to think of the best way to draw the man's attention. Whoever he was, the man who had their friends was oblivious. He was far too engrossed in bellowing to care what was going on around him.
"Fine," the man said. "If you want to go out acting childish, that's your call. Go ahead. Look wherever you want. I don't care. I suppose you think this is some sort of final act of defiance or something, but it's pointless. Nobody will ever know about it but me. It won't change anything. It won't save you. I've got you. You're done. Nothing can save you now."
"We didn't come all this way just to watch them die. We have to do something," Britt thought, "and we have to do it now."
Britt detected motion, turned, and saw that Martin had removed his left boot and hurled it at the stranger. The boot struck him in the back of the head. He staggered forward, more startled than stunned. He shook his head to regain his senses, looked down to see what had hit him, and then turned to see where it had come from. Before the stranger could recover from the shock, Martin chose to go on the attack.
"Who the hell are you?" Martin asked. "And what do you think you're doing?"
The stranger mumbled,
"I'm sorry."
The interruption had clearly thrown him. Martin didn't back down.
"I didn't ask if you were sorry. I asked who you are and what you think you're doing. Now come on, out with it. Chop, chop."
Martin snapped his fingers for emphasis. The stranger looked around, stammering. Martin briefly made eye contact with Britt and tilted his head toward the computer. She remembered why she was there and resumed sneaking around the perimeter of the room. She took even more care to be silent now. Despite Martin's assurances, she knew that it was possible for the lunatic to see both Martin and her, and since they had no powers, they'd probably be at his mercy. Surprise was the only advantage they had, and Martin was using it to the best of his abilities.
I'm Todd, the stranger stammered. "Who are you?"
"Don't change the subject, Todd,"
Martin said, Todd, as if it were an insult.
"You've told us who you are. Now explain what you're doing to those men."
They all knew that Martin couldn't keep this up forever. This Todd person would eventually remember that he had the advantage. Remembering what he was doing to those men brought it all back to him. His demeanor changed from quiet bewilderment to amused arrogance. Todd sneered at Martin and said,
"I am killing them. I am Todd, and I am killing these men. That answers both of your questions, doesn't it?"
Martin said,
"Yes, Todd, it does."
"Well, good. I would ask who you are, but I already know. I did a little recon in Lead Church when I was planning all this, so I know that you're Philip's little pal, Marvin."
"Martin,"
Martin corrected. Todd said,
"I don't care. The old guy is Roy, who'll probably be pretty mad when he hears what I did to his surrogate son figure, Jeff."
Todd inhaled deeply as he looked at Gwen.
"Of course, I remember you quite well, Gwen."
Gwen said, "Yeah, we've seen how well you remember me."
Todd looked confused for a second, then said,
"Oh, the Roadhouse. You saw that. You aren't offended, are you? Come on. That just means I thought you were hot."
"Those things you made were nothing like me," Gwen said.
"That's how I saw you."
Stop it! Gwen shouted. Stop seeing me that way!
Todd turned to his captives as if they were a posse of friends who had just seen him get shot down in a bar.
Some chicks just don't know how to take a compliment,
Gwen said, and some dudes don't know how to give one.
Britt froze dead in her tracks. She was almost to the corner of the hole in the wall where Todd's computer sat, but when Todd turned to look at his prisoners, the entire opening was in his field of view. Even when Todd turned his attention back to Martin and Gwen, Britt didn't dare get any closer. He could turn back at any time, and if he saw her, they were done. She looked to Roy and shrugged. He nodded slightly, understanding her predicament. Todd looked at Martin and Gwen, but he talked to himself.
They must have followed their friends here, applied the call-out. The system would have automatically applied a dampening field and started them.
Todd's eyes got wide.
You followed them all the way here. That means you did the quest, too. You had to. It never occurred to me to look back behind these jerks. I mean, I knew they were dumb enough to let me trap them, but it never occurred to me that you might actually trap yourselves.
Todd laughed far longer than the situation called for, then said,
Well, I'm glad you did the quest just like them, because you're going to die just like them. I have powers here. You don't. That means you're going to watch me kill your friends. Then I'm going to do the same thing to you.
Roy stepped forward.
Not the same thing.
What do you mean?
Todd asked.
Jeff told me all about you, Roy explained. He told me why you got banished, what you did to that poor peasant. From the looks of it, you're doing the same to the guys there.
What is he doing? Martin asked.
Roy said,
Philip never told you? Gwen either?
Gwen said,
It never came up, because I haven't thought about Todd once since the minute he left. Not once.
She glared at Todd as she said this, wanting to make sure he understood. He winked at her. Roy said,
For his macro, he created, well, Jeff described it as bands of force fields, designed to exactly fit a specific peasant. Once the peasant's body was inside the force field, he would force the peasant to do anything he wanted. The bands would hold him immobile, or manipulate the poor bastard's limbs like a puppet.
Wow, Martin said. That's awful.
Yeah. Awfully labor-intensive. The force bands have to fit perfectly. If there's even a quarter inch of space, the victim can struggle or slide out and the whole thing is ruined. He has to take detailed measurements and tailor each force field to the intended victim, and that takes time.
Martin asked, Couldn't he come up with code to automatically generate the force fields? Todd shook his head and opened his mouth to answer, but Roy interrupted.
If he was clever. Jeff has a couple ideas about how it could be done, just as an intellectual exercise, of course. Like I said, Jeff is clever. Todd here isn't.
Jeff isn't either,
Todd spat.
Not anymore. He's dead. I killed him in case my earlier hints were too subtle for you.
Roy said, Nah, we're time travelers. Whatever you did, we'll think of a way to undo it.
Not this. Todd said. I made a point of it. I dropped him off a cliff. Then I personally watched him fall all the way down until he crunched on the rocks. I can show you a video of it if you want.
He motioned over his shoulder to the computer sitting in the opening to his quarters, not realizing that said computer was the most important object in the world as far as everyone else in the room was concerned. Todd took a moment to savor the looks of fear and uncertainty on Martin's, Gwen's, and Roy's faces as they pondered Jeff's fate, then said,
Okay, you've got a point about the force fields. Of course, I could just jump back into the past, measure you all up for some force fields, then time jump back, but I have a better idea.
Todd rummaged around in his shoulder bag for a moment, then pulled out a silver, two-handled game controller. Philip, Gary, Jimmy, and Tyler recognized it instantly. So did Martin.
Hey! Martin said. A wave bird! I played a lot of Double Dash with one of those.
Todd said.
That was a good game.
Yeah, Martin agreed. Mario Kart never really got better.
Todd asked.
Did you ever actually try to use that stupid plastic steering wheel on the Wii?
Yeah, it was useless. I ended up using my old GameCube controllers anyway. Todd smiled.
I'm glad you like my controller. Because I'm going to use it to kill you.
Todd pressed the screen of his tablet with one of the free fingers of the hand that held the game controller. A glowing blue football-shaped jewel, about a foot tall, appeared above Philip's head and hung there, spinning in midair. Todd said,
You've played your share of games. I'm sure you recognize what that marker means. I've applied the control and melee combat algorithm from one of my company's games to your friends. See, my original idea was to play them through the entire quest myself, but I decided it'd be easier just to watch them struggle. I left the code in the system anyway, because it was easier to just deactivate it than fully remove it. It's a good thing I was lazy, because now I get to kill you three with your own friends. And for a little extra fun, I think I'll give them their speech back. It should be funny to listen to them cry and beg while they murder you.
Todd pressed the tablet again, then turned it off and put it away. He waited a moment in silence, then turned to his captives, making Britt glad she had decided to hold still. When he looked at Martin, Todd turned, and Britt was standing directly behind him. But whether he was looking at Martin to one side or his bound captives on the other, all he'd need to do is pivot a bit farther, and he could easily catch her in his peripheral vision. Todd said,
Well, they came all this way to rescue you. Don't you have anything to say?
Philip said,
Hi.
Martin said, Hey. Roy, Gwen, Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy all followed suit with quiet, monosyllabic greetings. Of course, they all had a great deal more they wanted to say, but not in front of Todd. Todd looked back to his captives, causing yet another heart-stopping close call for Britt and everyone else. Todd said,
I don't think any of you appreciate the gravity of your situation. I'm about to force you all to fight to the death. And any of you who survives the battle will get the reward of being killed by me, personally. 1 hour from now, you'll all be corpses. And I'll be seeing what's on TV.
Martin's mind was racing. Playing this low-key had clearly agitated Todd, but it also caused him to lose focus, nearly getting Britt spotted as he shifted his attention back and forth. Martin needed to get Todd to focus on him, and the easiest way to get attention is always to be unpleasant.
No, Martin said as smugly as possible. That's not how this is going to play out.
Really?
Todd asked.
Why not?
Because you're going to screw it up. We all know it. I'm sure you like to think you're this devious, calculating killer, but you're not. I don't know if it's that you're too dumb, or lack the backbone, or maybe your heart's not really in it. Really, probably all three. The point is, you'll screw this up just like you have every other part of this whole thing.
Tyler nearly voiced his agreement, but thought better of it. Britt was on the move again, and they all wanted Todd to keep his eyes on Martin. Todd said,
I killed Jeff!
Yeah. Your first mistake, Martin said. Take out the most mild-mannered member of the group and keep the argumentative, immature, dangerous ones to play with.
Brilliant! It was brilliant!
Todd cried.
I made them all run around, risking their lives for my amusement, and it worked!
Only because you're easily amused,
Martin said. It took all of his willpower not to look at Britt, who was now behind their friends. She had reached the corner of Todd's apartment and was trying to silently lift herself up onto the ledge. Martin needed to keep Todd focused on him.
You're stupid. So everything you've made has been stupid. And the fact that you're happy with it is proof of its stupidity, or yours, or really both. Anyway, you can't kill us. You've already tried.
Martin said.
There are only three of us, and we survived everything you threw at us. The mountain pass, the wolves that always attack in pairs, the army of soldiers in front of the castle, that enchanted cloak you left in our way that spawned eight wolves when I put it on. Why are you all laughing?
Philip, Jimmy, Gary, and Tyler were chuckling in spite of themselves, but stopped abruptly when Todd turned to look at them. They were certain they had blown it. But behind them, Britt had made it up onto the ledge and was ducking behind the computer desk. If Todd had looked directly toward her for even a second, he'd have seen something was wrong. But he didn't. He glanced at his prisoners, then turned away smugly, happy that they'd stopped laughing when he looked at them. Todd said,
"You never caught on to what Tyler here did. None of that stuff was really meant to kill anyone. It could have, and it wouldn't have broken my heart. But none of it was supposed to be 100% fatal. This next part is."
Todd pushed the left thumbstick of his controller forward. Philip lurched forward with an awkward zombie-like gait. Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy walked beside him, shoulder to shoulder, parting to walk around Todd. Gary looked terrible, but his missing foot did not seem to impede his walking in the slightest. The ring-shaped cutting blade that had been hovering directly beneath Gary's severed leg remained firmly in place. Martin remembered that the force fields were supporting their weight and moving their limbs, meaning that they would be much stronger than normal, even without their powers. They stopped, standing like a human barrier between their tormentor and their would-be rescuers.
"All righty then," Todd muttered, fiddling with his controller. "Go into fight mode."
All four of the prisoners drew their swords. In unison, they assumed a fighting stance, right feet forward, right hands holding their swords high in front of them. As Philip's right arm extended, he let out a blood-curdling shriek. The sling that had been cradling his arm was made of the same beige fur as his surprisingly fluffy coat, and had blended in so well that Martin hadn't realized his arm was hurt. Philip's arm reached forward with the same speed and force as the others. The sling stretched, then ripped. It would have been an impressive demonstration of strength if he hadn't been screaming bloody murder. Philip stood panting, holding his broken arm out ahead of himself. His makeshift sling was pinned to his forearm by the force field, but its broken straps dangled uselessly. Todd lit up.
"Hey, that gives me an idea!"
He fumbled with his controller, and various parts of Philip's body glowed until his left arm was selected. Todd rotated the right thumbstick, and Philip's arm rotated, twisting his upper arm well past the point that a non-broken arm could go. Philip grimaced and shook, but he didn't cry out. Todd said,
"I think on G.I. Joe dolls they used to call that a kung fu grip."
He looked at Martin, then Gwen, then Roy. He seemed genuinely surprised that none of them saw the humor in the situation. His face darkened. Todd said,
"Ugh, I'm tired of this. Let's get it over with."
Philip's arm rotated back to normal and stopped glowing. A neon blue line traced through the air from Philip to Martin. The glowing blue jewel moved from Philip to Gary, and a line extended from him to Gwen. Then the jewel leapt to Tyler, and a line connected him to Roy. Finally, the jewel jumped to Jimmy, and after a moment of thought on Todd's part, a line went from Jimmy to Martin. Martin said,
"So I'm getting double-teamed? I'd be flattered if your opinion meant anything to me."
Todd said,
"Yak, yak, yak."
The jewel went back to Philip, and all at once, the four captives moved toward their designated targets. Jimmy, Tyler, and Gary took a straight path to their opponents, but Philip was under Todd's direct control and weaved a bit on his way to Martin. Britt was horrified that her friends were fighting her other friends, but was delighted that the battle was taking place in front of Todd, giving him no reason to turn around and see her messing with his computer. The screen was dark, but the monitor's power light was flashing. She twisted the speaker's volume knob all the way down to nothing, then moved the mouse back and forth, hoping to wake the computer up.
"This Todd guy seems like the type to either dumb things down to where even a child could handle it, or keep everything convoluted and disorganized," she thought.
With any luck, there'll be one application running with a nice big button labeled Restore Powers.
The black screen blinked, then resolved into a recognizable Windows desktop. The taskbar was filled with the icons of minimized running programs, all with the same icon, a cartoon picture of a black computer screen. The left half of the desktop was a grid of program and document icons, each with a long, nonsensical file name. They were lined up so tightly that they obscured most of the non-Disney-sanctioned drawing of Jessica Rabbit that Todd was using for a wallpaper image. Todd only had direct control over one of his prisoners at a time. He started with Philip. The others were all governed by the same poorly designed fighting algorithm that had controlled almost everything hostile since the quest started. This meant that Tyler and Gary had advanced on Gwen and Roy, stood motionless in a threatening pose for a moment, then each attacked their quarry with a single swing. Gary took a swing at Gwen, while Tyler attacked Roy. Of course, Gwen and Roy could have killed them easily at that point, but they didn't want to. Instead, they blocked the blow with their own swords, then waited for the next attack, which always came from the same side at the same speed after the same amount of time.
I never knew there was such a thing as being surprisingly predictable, Gwen thought.
Martin had both Philip and Jimmy to contend with, but because Jimmy was also governed by the computer, he was waiting his turn while Philip attacked. Philip's swings were much less predictable since they were being controlled by a real human being, but that human being was Todd, who was proving to be a bit of a button masher. Martin had his hands full fending off Philip's flailing attacks. Philip was clearly in tremendous pain. Martin could only imagine that all of this movement with an unsupported, broken arm would be excruciating. Martin tried to get Philip's mind off the pain. Martin said,
"Nice mink you've got there, Zsa Zsa."
Philip took a wild swing toward Martin's midsection, which Martin handily blocked.
"Is that you, Martin?"
Philip asked.
"I didn't recognize you dressed like a person instead of the mirror ball at Studio 54.
Martin said, "God, you are old." Philip's body brought his sword down viciously with both hands. His mouth asked,
"Would it have been less dated to say you usually dress like the Silver Surfer?"
"Not by much," Martin said, holding Philip's blade at bay.
"It's good to see in one piece, Philip."
Philip said,
"You too, Martin. Try to stay that way."
Gwen's main challenge was not fighting off Gary's attacks, but resisting the urge to offer him a seat and try to get him medical attention.
"You look like hell,"
she said, deflecting one of his sword thrusts. Gary said,
"Sounds about right. That's how I feel."
His skin was pale. He was pouring sweat. He looked like he could pass out any second. Gwen said,
"Stay awake, Gary. I can tell you want to go to sleep, but don't. You lost some blood. You're probably in shock. You need to stay awake."
"I'll try,"
Gary said, swinging his sword toward Gwen's head.
"But it ain't easy."
Gwen said,
"I know."
She raised her voice so Todd couldn't help but hear.
"It just shows how poorly made this whole thing is, that you're having to struggle to stay awake while in the middle of a sword fight."
Todd continued mashing the buttons and staring intently at Philip and Martin's fight, but split his attention long enough to say,
"Go ahead, Gary, fall asleep. It won't make any difference. The force fields are doing the fighting. Get some sleep. Heck, don't bother waking up at all. Fine by me. Your corpse will keep fighting until Gwen gets tired and slips up."
Roy asked,
"But if they're dead, won't they drop their swords?"
Todd said, "No, the force field's holding the sword. Even if they did drop it, I could still make them slap you to death with their limp corpse hands. That actually sounds pretty entertaining now that I think about it. Huh, maybe later if this starts to get boring. I guess we'll just have to see where the evening takes us."
Britt tuned the rest of the world out as she sifted through applications and screens at breakneck speed. Her job was to end the fighting below, not pay attention to it. The faster she found a way to get their powers back, the sooner the fight would end. Some of the active applications seemed to control aspects of the quest they'd been through. Others governed things they hadn't seen, like a giant spider. Most of the windows were images of locations, like surveillance cam footage of the path they'd taken.
She could see the mine, the desert, the castle, but the majority of the images were live feeds of the inside of a cabin. Britt assumed that it was the roadhouse where the Gwen-shaped temptresses had tried to draw them in, seeing as the place was crawling with half-dressed Gwenches. Every angle of every room was covered, including the bathroom. Nothing happened in that place without Todd seeing it. Britt tucked this knowledge away to either protect Gwen from or torment Gwen with, depending on her mood at the time. At last, Britt found what she'd been looking for, and what she saw made her heart soar, then plummet in quick succession. It was clearly the application that was controlling the status of his various prisoners. While there was no big red restore button, there was a pull-down menu marked dampening field. She checked the options, and one was deactivate. This was all good news. The bad news was that the top of the window bore the headline Merlin. Next to the various menus and statistics, there was a rotating image of Jimmy, updating in real time to show what he was doing, and a map to show where he was doing it. Britt allowed herself a few seconds to search for a menu that would switch to someone, anyone else, but none was obvious. She looked at the remaining running applications she had not yet checked. There was nothing to indicate what any of them did. She clicked on the next one and got another view of the bathroom in the Gwench's cabin again. She minimized it and was back to Jimmy's page. She could hear swords clashing and Todd gloating. She didn't shift her focus to listen to what he was saying. She didn't dare. This wasn't the worst-case scenario. That would have been finding no way to give anyone their powers back, and the whole lot of them getting killed. This was the second worst-case scenario. The only person she could restore power to at the moment was Jimmy. Nobody trusted Jimmy, and nobody included Britt. Jimmy had killed people and proven himself untrustworthy. Now she was considering trusting him to save their lives. She didn't know what to do. But she knew what she didn't want to do, and that was explain why someone died while she was hesitating when she had a way to save them. She moved the mouse to the dampening field menu and thought, Philip isn't gonna like this. Gwen and Roy were getting tired, but they were still managing to fend off Tyler's and Gary's attacks. Martin, meanwhile, was having to work hard to battle Philip, who was under Todd's direct control. Normally, Martin would counterattack, but he had no wish to injure Philip and knew that doing so wouldn't help anyway, so Martin was stuck playing defense. He tried to make up for this by pouring his extra energy into trash talk.
You're done for, Todd, Martin said. I've got your moves.
Really?
Todd asked.
What are my moves, then?
You keep trying the same two attacks in quick succession until you think I'm used to it. Then you try a third. You think you're gonna catch me off guard,
Todd said.
But not you. You're smart. You're paying far too much attention to Philip's sword arm for that to ever work, aren't you?
Martin said. You know it,
Todd said.
Let's see if you're ready for this.
Philip had been alternating between swinging at Martin's torso and his legs for a while. Martin was already watching for a change-up. His senses went on high alert. He watched Philip's sword arm, waiting for some hint of where he would attack next. The arms did not move. Philip barked, Martin! Martin looked up and saw that the spinning blue jewel that denoted who was under Todd's direct control was no longer hovering over Philip. In one smooth, coordinated motion, Martin cringed, yelped, and spun 180 degrees. He saw that Jimmy was now under Todd's control. Jimmy held his sword in two hands like an axe and was bringing it straight down with all of his force directly toward Martin's head. Time seemed to slow. Jimmy looked horrified. Martin was horrified. He tried to get his sword up to block, but he knew it would be too little too late. He saw his own blade rising, and beyond it, Jimmy's expression changed from horror to shock. In the last instant, the momentum went out of his swing, and his elbows seemed to lose all strength. Jimmy's blade slowed and struck Martin's sword with greatly reduced force. Jimmy's knees buckled. He dropped like a rag doll and landed on his butt, rolling backward on the slanted floor, but his face broke into a wide, delighted grin. From the computer, Britt yelled, Jimmy, you've got your powers! Todd let out an inarticulate cry of alarm and confusion, but was drowned out by Tyler, still hacking away at Roy, shrieking,
"No, not Jimmy! Anyone but Jimmy!"
Roy moaned in such a way as to make it clear that he did not disagree. Jimmy saw Gwen glancing wearily at him, distracting herself long enough for Gary to nick her left thigh. Martin was still cringing, with his sword over his head. He was looking down at Jimmy with an odd combination of hope and fear. Behind him, Philip was still in a holding pattern, waiting for his turn to attack. Philip looked Jimmy in the eye and said,
"Don't screw us."
Jimmy scowled, said,
"Extraction, penthouse,"
and disappeared.